Welcome back. We have episode 492 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I'm so happy that Arrow, like Covert Affairs, has discovered the value of a red dress.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm glad that so many people are watching something that goes so fast and still catching it.
Oh, sorry, no, this is Broadstuff from Australia. Sorry, Edmund mentioned red dress. I got a little sidetracked.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Well, yes, we are going to be resuming this week's rundown of the last 2 weeks' worth of material as the fall season is in full swing. There's shows that actually still need to premiere, guys. Can you believe this? But at any rate, we are still definitely in the throes of the fall season, and there's quite a lot to talk about. But first, before we do any of that and go through any of these news items that we are still covering, Edmund.
We just need to warn you that if you haven't been following the news, if you haven't been watching these shows, we will talk about anything and everything, so you will be horribly spoiled. We try and wait at least a week or so before we do that to you.
That's right, that's right. And to that effect, we are going to get started with some news stories, and of course, as usual, if there are going to be spoilers and rumors and such, this is probably going to be the furthest out that any of that is going to be. So let's go ahead with this first one, and... Edmund, why don't you take this one? You already kind of commented on this.
Yes, well, just in case you thought American Horror Story Freak Show wasn't going to be the craziest thing FX has ever done, they now apparently have decided that Ryan Murphy should move on to American Crime Story and that he should tackle true crime. So naturally, the first 10-episode series will be on the OJ trial.
Who are they casting as Cato Caitlin?
Yes, unfortunately, none of those details have been released yet, and we know that Jessica Lange has said that she isn't returning to American Horror Story, so I presume she will not be returning as Nicole's mother. But
what do you mean? She's returning as OJ.
Yes, of course.
that might get me to watch this because there's precious little else that will. That's for sure. Yeah. Wow. That's special. All right, I think we'll just move along then to something a little bit more promising. I think we've talked a little bit about this show that USA is putting out called Dig. Somewhat infamously was caught in the quote-unquote crossfire with some of the unrest in the Middle East of late as they were filming this. But the highly anticipated event series Dig is being given 4 additional episodes, so a total of 10. It's supposed to premiere in March of 2015. This show has interesting potential, although it is being executive produced by both Tim Kring of Heroes and Gideon Raff of Homeland.
Yeah.
So take that for what you will. But what I find interesting about this is that this is basically a mega event miniseries, and they're adding 4 episodes. So,
yeah.
Interesting. I don't know how exactly that's supposed to work.
The more I read the cast for the show, the more interested I am.
Right?
I'm not going to lie. Like, I obviously haven't been following this this thing very well. And so I think, you know, it's the article, what does it have? It's a March 5 premiere date for action thriller from powerhouse auspices Tim Kring of Heroes and Gideon Raff, Homeland. And I was about ready to close the article right there.
And then you saw things like Jason Isaacs, Richard E. Grant. So, and then you went, wait,
yeah,
wait.
David Costabile, Lauren Ambrose, yeah, no, I had been seeing some of the trailers for this since, you know, that premiere did get moved back, so they were starting to hype it before all the problems cropped up, they were certainly putting together an intriguing enough trailers and teasers, I am interested to see what actually transpires.
Yes, the premise and the cast is what's keeping me interested here, so we'll see if that remains true going forward. Gary, I think that you would love to talk about this next one quickly.
Oh, yes, I will speak about it very quickly. We're talking, of course, about The Flash. Its premiere is the highest CW premiere in over 5 years. It is the third highest premiere ever behind Vampire Diaries and 90210. A lot of people watched it. A lot of people liked it. So it looks like it's all thumbs up, and they're hitting on all cylinders here.
Yeah, definitely great news. It speaks to the fact that this genre and the its presence on the CW is not overloaded quite yet, anyway. Speaking of highest rated premieres, Bronstone, why don't you take the next one?
I can probably handle that. The Walking Dead Season 5 premiere has... it's hit a... To put a thing. It was watched by a series high 11 million adults, viewers aged 18 to 49, which translates to an 8.7 adults 18 to 49 rating, up 6% from the Season 4 premiere. That was a lot of things that sounded like math. It's what is it? The highest rated episode in the series history, I'm not surprised, having watched it.
17.3 million viewers on AMC.
Yeah,
that's the part that blows my mind.
Yeah,
that's old school network numbers.
Yes, yes, that's like mega hit major network numbers. I'm trying to remember if Person of Interest ever hit those numbers. I think it maybe did a couple times.
I think it did. Yeah,
mark.
Yeah. But still very impressive. And for those of us who do follow the wonky demographic stuff, because that is what the networks and the advertisers care about. The fact that demographic rating actually outperformed Sunday Night Football was even more surprising.
You hear that? People like zombies more than football.
Yes.
there's more similarities there than you might. Anyway.
Yeah.
I say that as a football fan. Fifth season premiere is the highest rated episode of the series yet. That doesn't happen very often. Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. That's not to say that it doesn't happen occasionally. For it to happen roughly within the same week is even more impressive. So, Edmund, if you don't mind skipping down to the next story about ratings, the one for American Horror Story.
Yeah, hold on. that was American Horror Story, of course, came back with Freak Show, as I was just alluding to, and it set the record for the most watched show in FX history. Not quite the numbers of Walking Dead, but still 10 million total viewers and 6.54 in the crucial 18 to 49 demographic. And they're also talking about with the premiere and encore viewers, I don't think this even includes DVR yet, that they were north of 13 million. Another record-setting performance on a cable channel, which I believe has even less reach than AMC at this point. So very impressive, It has been rewarded with also getting a order, a 13 episode order for a fifth installment. So.
Yeah, so another cable series that has managed to pull off its highest-rated episode well into its run, which is astonishing. Especially now, The Walking Dead at least has this ongoing zeitgeist going for it. American Horror Story has a pattern now, three seasons running, where the beginning of the season is considered to be just ridiculously good, and yet I have yet to hear one season that hasn't disappointed everybody by the end.
Yes.
So it's kind of odd that way.
Yeah, I mean, Coven, at least for me, managed to wait until the very end. I mean, it was the last episode that I found disappointing. But
yeah. Let's see. Now, Gary, why don't you take the one that we skipped, which is about a show that Sci-Fi is developing.
Absolutely. Is it okay to mention Ben Affleck again in two shows in a row? Okay,
yeah,
I just wanted to make sure. I don't want people getting, overwhelmed by him, but yeah. Sci-Fi is developing a new drama called Incorporated with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's Pearl Street Films Company. Edmund will like this. It's a futuristic espionage thriller set in a world where corporations have complete power. And
I'm sorry, a futuristic espionage thriller?
Yeah. Yes.
Not a low-budget documentary?
No. And
I'm just wondering, isn't this called...
One man's
I've been sitting on that joke for 20 minutes.
You sit on it longer. It's still in pretty rough production at this point, but They don't have a release date for it, just that they've signed up to develop it. So we'll have to see where it goes. It seems certainly has a large topic to cover, and I don't believe that I've ever seen Damon or Affleck really working with futuristic times. They've often seemed rather grounded in their production, so we'll have to see where this goes.
Yeah, I suppose we shall.
Yeah, I know. My immediate reaction was thinking, it's Continuum, the future years.
Yes, there you go. I was thinking it was Person of Interest, the future years, but that's okay.
No, Person of Interest, a documentary. So.
Yeah, right. There you go. Last one. Edmund, why don't you take this one, since I know that you're a big fan.
Absolutely. This was very good news for all the fans of Manhattan, that it has, in fact, been renewed for a second season by WGN.
Yeah.
So we aren't going to be left hanging, wondering whether the bomb works or not.
How does it end?
With a bang.
Ends in fire.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Japan. Anyway, we are going to therefore wrap up our new segment and have our mid-show break. When we return, it will be time for episodic discussion, so stay tuned. Okay, well, we are back for our episodic discussion, and Edmund, I think it is your turn to decide what we are going to cover.
Absolutely, and I think we should talk about the return of Arrow.
Sounds good to me. Let's go ahead and let's see, two episodes, run the first promo.
There are still a few things that you don't know about me. Something's gonna die. You, for example.
You have failed this city.
Arrow, season premiere, Wednesday, October 8th on the CW.
All right, and recap, please.
This is Arrow, season 3, episode 1, The Calm. Season 3 begins with a new villain, Vertigo, emerging, just as Oliver tries to balance his life and ask out Felicity. Meanwhile, Diggle becomes a father, Lance is promoted to captain, Laurel joins Arrow's inner circle, and Felicity gets a part-time job at a tech store to make ends meet and hope to meet Chuck.
Chuck would hope that he gets to meet Felicity. Thank you very much.
Yes.
All right, let's see here. So, what would you give this one?
I will give this an 8.5.
Okay, and Bronze Thumb?
I'll give this one an 8.
All right. Gary, did you happen to watch this?
No, I'm staying so far with Gotham and Flash. No, I still haven't managed to jump on the Arrow bandwagon, although with all the chit-chat, I was curious. I might go back and pick it up.
So you're watching one half of the Arrowverse, but not the other half of the... Okay.
I'm watching the sunny side, okay? And I like it where I like it nice and bright and sunny and smiles on people's faces, okay?
Okay, you've now wiped my short-term memory. Edmund, what did you give this one again?
8.5.
And Ron's Thumb?
8.
Okay, sorry. I was formatting in the background at the same time. It's not a good thing to do. 8.5 for me, by the way. And let's see if I go on over to our friends. Let's see this. I'm now behind because I was trying to do all this. Over at VOG, we had quite a few actual contributions to this episode, as I recall. We had the episode review by Nadim over on VOGnetwork.com, and he gave this one an 8.5. So there we go. So it sounds to me like this one was well received. Get us started here, Edmund. What was your highlight for this episode? And I'm hoping it wasn't the last few seconds.
No. No, but certainly compared to when we were talking about Supernatural and our problems with that one, I mean, this is a case of a show coming back and really, after having some pretty major events at the end of last season, and kind of as that recap showed, I mean, we're really starting out running with all of the new situations, and with Peter Stormare, who as the new villain Vertigo, taking over from the old Vertigo, so a very nice over the top villain, since Mr. Stormare does love to chew the scenery, and was doing that quite nicely as he takes over the gangs, doing all those things of laying the groundwork with Lance's situation, and the fact he's now he is alive, as we did kind of expect. That was just minor cliffhanger, and I thought that very nice moment of him publicly bearing the hatchet with the Arrow, there was sort of all those logistical things going on, and then the way they continued to work in the Oliver and Felicity stuff, in what I thought was a very natural way, and Diggle as the catalyst made a lot of sense, and even as much as I was anticipating the whole time, you know, that it was going to be the standard comic book thing of yes, they go out, but then it goes horribly wrong, and he's driven to say I can't do this because I'm going to be putting you in danger. I thought they did do it very well, and certainly a lot of that being helped by the chemistry that Emily Betts and Stephen Amell have with each other. The actual date itself, did feel like a real date between two people who've been sort of dancing around each other and are now trying to put their best foot forward. And then at the same time, the little background thing, which will come to fruition in the more in the next episode of Brandon Routh coming in as this new element on the corporate side of things, which is feeling a lot better done than Summer Glau's guest appearances last season. So yeah, I thought it was just a very strong return, and just a great way of a great premiere to really push the story forward and get us going for this new season.
Whoa.
I think we're losing you, buddy.
That's not good.
To be fair, though, he did just say that he thought that Brandon Routh did a better job than Summer Glau. Like, it's possible that the universe just, you know, went, I can't even.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
It's not the kind of thing one expects to have to say.
Yes. Wasn't Summer's fault. It was the writer's fault.
Yes, it was. In fact, it was. All right, well, Ronstum, what would you add or disagree with there, if at all?
Well, you hit on the head the majority of things that I thought about the episode, that it did a great job of what we were talking about earlier with the Supernatural episode, is that enough things had – there'd been enough time and enough had changed that we really needed a Where Are We Now episode. And they did a really good job of folding in a, you know, a decent enough A story, not a brilliant one, but, you know – decent enough that we're along for the ride, and in the meantime we're, you know, finding out more and more about where all these characters, or where most of the characters, I should say, have gotten to in the intervening time. It came right out and started to address, you know, started to address the Ollie and Felicity stuff. It leapt into, you know, Roy, you know, being a sort of more dependable part of the team, Laurel being more on board with things, the stuff with Quentin, and yeah, like there was enough happening to justify it. And then at the same time, you know, it leads into the final scene, which was surprisingly shocking for someone who had seen this coming a year ago.
They did a nice job of, while setting up the possibility of a transfer of the mantle of Black Canary to that. You still thought it was going to be well down the road, not perhaps being set up immediately. I have no idea what exactly prompted them to go in the direction of one-upping Skyrim and making it an arrow to the gut rather than an arrow to the knee, but it... Wow. Yeah, that was shocking. And it might as well lead us right into our discussion of the next episode, so here's the promo for that one.
Our friend was shot with an arrow and fell off of a rooftop. This is Sarah. You are Sarah.
Everyone is looking to me to lead.
Whoever did this, I'm going to find them.
Arrow, all new, next Wednesday at 8, 7 Central.
All right, and that would be... Arrow, Season 3, Episode 2, Sarah. A mysterious archer known as Komodo appears in town and begins skewering businessmen. Meanwhile, Oliver worries about Thea, which forces Roy to tell him the truth about why she left town, and Ray Palmer pursues Felicity. In a flashback, Oliver is assigned his first kill, and the target is his best friend, Tommy. And there's a little something that they're leaving out of this recap. Oh, yeah, and Sarah's dead.
Yes. Categorically, we see a body. Comic book rules have been...
Yes.
Held
by the way, what would you give this one, Edmund?
Yes. I will also give this an 8.5.
And Bronstone?
I'll give this one a 9.
All right. Nadim gave this one a 9. Henry gave this one an 8.5. I will give it a 9. So, yes, definitely a big episode. Big, big, big episode. So, Bronstum, just... Sarah's dead.
Told ya.
Yeah, I would say so.
But it had been that long, and they played it in such a way in the previous episode that I you know... wasn't necessarily as on edge for it as I was at the end of the previous season. And therefore, it, you know, it was more of a shock. It had more of an impact. We're right along with the other characters in feeling the loss and in wanting to see some sort of retribution. And they did a really good job of, you know, taking all the characters through a grief arc. Of having them all deal with these, just expressing very fundamental aspects of the character through the way that they express their grief. Ollie is, you know, really trying to hold it together, whereas Felicity is just not afraid to sort of let her emotions show. Laurel is in anger mode. Deagle's doing kind of the same thing as Ollie, but much better. God, I feel so bad for Quentin. just like I was expecting at the end like a really touching scene like of you know how he's going to deal with it, and then he gets kind of robbed of that, and like that was just really sad in its way. And yeah, they did such a great job of making this a very character-centric episode that I was really, really impressed. And then on top of that, they did I thought they did a better job with the flashbacks in this episode than the previous one. I mean, I don't think we talked about the flashbacks at all in the previous one, but here,
noteworthy.
Yeah, but here they sort of give us a sense of where, you know, where they're going to take the flashbacks now, and they did it in a really good way by bringing back Tommy in a way that's smart, not comic booky, and showing us again Ollie having to deal with something. It was this really great little story, and I'm this made me far more interested in where they're going to take Ollie in this flashback things. I mean, we've already seen him become a bit of kind of a badass archer, and now, you know, having him off the island for a period of like 2-3 years, it opens up the story in which is good in a way, but as long as you've got somewhere to take it, and now I'm confident they've got somewhere to take it. So yeah, it was just a fantastic hour of television.
Yeah, I know that we had talked about going all the way back to before the second season when they said that they had cast someone for Black Canary, and everyone was kind of gnashing their teeth and going like, well, how can you do that? Especially when they went on to then say very coyly that Black Canary was going to have a major ongoing presence in Oliver's life, which I think even then we commented on the fact that they were parsing their words very carefully in not saying that the Sarah Lance character was necessarily going to be the one to have a long-term presence in his life, but rather Black Canary. And meanwhile, they're making all of these kind of hints to Laurel eventually taking up the mantle, and having this very kind of unfortunate way of expressing that her preparation for that mentally, psychologically, in the second season. So, but here we are, and they've now very brutally taken Sarah out of the picture. And Laurel, for all intent purposes, I was wondering if when she went on her kind of mission of vengeance in this episode, if she was going to actually take up the appearance of Black Canary right then and there. She didn't, but I don't know that it's very far away. She seems like she's ready to do it tomorrow. I think it's only going to be the other factors that play into it that keep her from doing it right away. Not the least of which is, like you said, Lance Quentin being kind of kept out of the loop just yet. Now, as far as predictions go, who do you think did it? Edmund, why don't you go ahead and weigh in on this first?
Yeah, that was rather intriguing in terms of I thought that they did that very nicely in terms of she is showing some, like, she knows who it is, but she's showing some surprise. I think they want us all to think it was Merlin, Papa Merlin, my thinking is still going to the League of Assassins for some reason, even though that doesn't necessarily make sense given their code, unless they think she's broken it. So,
Bronstam, how about you?
Well, I'll just say that I didn't think for a second it was going to be the guy that they all thought it was going to be, the guy that they all thought it was. Like that, I'm glad that turned out to be a red herring. My thinking is that this is how they're introducing Ra's al Ghul. I have two theories, and I think one of them would be very dramatically interesting, and one of them is more likely, and the latter is that I think it's Ra's al Ghul. This is, I mean, it's the classic thing is like, how do you, you know, when you bring in a villain, you need to establish their villainy, their villainness, their, you know, give them good evil credentials, and get both the audience and the characters on board with the idea of, you know, taking him down. And one of the classic ways is like, well, he's going to kill someone we all like. I mean, it's a classic Joss Whedon trope. You know, more than people. That said, though, I think the other thought I had about who it might have been is that if they're trying to set up a really interesting, you know, dramatic arc is that I think they might go with the option with the thing of having it be Thea.
That was actually right where I was going, because Sarah was surprised to see who it was, but it wasn't like it was somebody that was shocking to see in the town. It was more in the context that she was seeing this other person. At least that was the way that I interpreted it. And my thought would be is that, and she wasn't reacting with any sense of possible threat. And that's why I was thinking that it's like, if Thea was there, she would be like, well, what are you doing here?
Yeah, she was, exactly, she was surprised.
It was like, huh?
She was surprised to see this person and then shocked that they would kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why Thea is kind of at the top of my list. Especially as we see her at the end of the episode. So.
Yeah, it's a really, it makes for a lot of, you know, drama, but it's also a good way to keep Thea, you know, more involved in the ongoing story and whatnot. Because one thing I quite liked about the last couple of episodes is the idea of they're even though Ollie's still trying to get Queen Consolidated back, after losing it, is that they're shifting him out of the a bit more out of the corporate side of things, and I personally kind of like that. I mean, between this and Smallville, one of the things about Green Arrow is that they had him be sort of very, very, very Bruce Wayne, and I'm honestly not sure how much of that is accurate to him in the comics and whatnot, but I like the idea of just taking him out of that corporate setting. I mean, I imagine it'll still play in a bit, especially with, you know, the fact that we've been introduced to Roy Palmer and having Felicity go and work for him at the end of the episode and whatnot, but having Ollie not be as big a part of that environment sort of gives him, you know, further distinguishes him, further makes at least this version of Green Arrow a bit more distinct, and they can do more things with it. I mean, we're seeing a sort of similar thing in Person of Interest that we'll, you know, as we'll get to lately, of just we don't have quite as much petty cash as we used to.
I particularly like the way they showed the corporate side of things, the two contrasting presentations of Ollie basically saying, you know, no, this is my family's company and I'd like to keep running it, please, and then Palmer coming in and giving, you know, an actual presentation that made business sense, and, you know, as well as being, you know, as well as being flashy and charismatic, and it really made sense why the board would go with him and not with the family figurehead.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on these two episodes of Arrow?
No. Can it be Wednesday now?
Well, this is actually probably running on Wednesday. So,
oh, that's
yeah.
True. Yay, I got my wish. Okay.
Exactly. All right. Gary, I think that you've been kind of off for a while here. Why don't you go ahead and choose our next topic?
Sure, we were talking about it in the opening, or at least how well the ratings did on it, so let's get into the episode now. Let's talk about The Walking Dead.
All right, and here's the promo.
I just hope you understand. We didn't want to hurt you.
No!
I will kill you. No matter what anyone says, no matter what you think, you are not safe.
All right, and if you could do the recap.
Yes, we're talking about Walking Dead, Season 5, Episode 1, No Sanctuary. Rick and their group find themselves in a really bad spot in the Season 5 opener.
Okay.
I and see. I don't know if we really need to go into this, because from what I'm told, everyone in the world watched it, so we
yeah,
should.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I got to watch it in a cinema.
Ooh.
You Australians always got that.
I know, right? What is this all about? Anyway, Yeah. What would you give this one, Gary?
I will give it a 7.5.
Okay. And how about you, Bronson?
I'd give this one an 8.
Okay. And Edmund?
I'll go 8.5.
All right.
I feel like I'm at an auction.
Hmm?
I feel like I'm at an auction.
Yeah, right. Let's see. I'll weigh in on mine as soon as I look it up. But in the meantime, Gary, I mean, you're the one who is kind of the kind of brought us to this in a certain sense. What are your initial thoughts here on this one?
Don't get me wrong. It was a strong episode. I love the opening where they're like gearing for battle, and then they toss in a stun grenade or smoke grenade of some sort, and so all their battle plans are just completely lost after all that sharpening and carving and those few minutes of scenes to get us really excited for their chances, and then to have them hopelessly dashed within a few seconds. I thought that was a really great little writing segment there. We go through and it looked like they were Rick and company were about ready to get bled out and slaughtered, and if we had any doubts as to what was happening, now we pretty well we're pretty confident about what's going on. I like that a lot. A lot of it seemed very predictable though, and that's sort of what lost some points for me. It's one of those things. We knew they were going to get out. At least most of them would at least get out, but all of them getting out was a little bit of a slight surprise for me. It in some ways was almost a reset. I never felt like there were any real scars. If anything, this did bring them closer together back during the good times at the prison, where they were really relying on each other and trusted each other. It felt like those bonds were reestablished throughout all this. So I found it interesting. We still have the ongoing thing about the guy needing to go to DC, and as they're talking to him, it seemed even more odd of if he knows what the hell he's talking about. So yeah, I wish there was more surprises in this. There just really weren't for me. Everybody at Terminus was going to die, and I had no doubt about that. Rick was somewhat rather insistent, but all the important people got killed, at least the ones that we got to know and hate. So regardless
of them.
Yes, that's an important distinction.
Most of them, I thought. At least the ones that were important to me. So that was nice. It was I did enjoy Rick's sort of determination of wanting to go back. It's sort of – I thought he had sort of gotten through some of this obsession that he's had, but it's still lurking there. So that's food for future shows. But overall, it was fairly well predicted. We knew they were going to escape. Everybody got out pretty much unscathed. So yay, but at the same time – it seemed like a poor wrap up for me. Yeah, it was, it's no other zombie situation that they sort of hadn't been stuck in before. So I was hoping for something new, something different, but it never really happened. I was maybe hoping of another big Denise Crosby scene of some sort, but we got a scene with her, but it wasn't quite the scene I was hoping for.
Now, I said I was going to score it here. I gave it a 9.5. I thought that it was really good. And the reader over at VOG gave it a 10. Flacco Jones, he summed it up as, great start, really looking forward to the season even more. I, too, was afraid Terminus was going to be one of those half-season-long arcs that the show is famous for, but was glad it went all down in one shot. I thought the bookend flashbacks were a fantastic way to show what could happen to a group of good guys when they are taken advantage of. It's also nice to see a happy Rick for once, and was that Morgan making an appearance in the end? Yes, it was. The flashbacks, first of all, I was really happy to see that Terminus was not going to be this long drug-out thing, as some people were a little bit afraid of. I liked the fact that they kind of took care of it in one fell swoop. I think it was great that Carol was the one that did so much.
Yes.
I thought that she pulled off a huge win for the character here, not the least of which was the contrast of the mindset that Rick was in when he kind of set her on her own, because she was not fitting into society the way that they were rebuilding it, only to then embrace her completely in this episode, now that the reality of the situation has once again turned for them. Very much important, very importantly, before he knew that she had been with Judith and that the baby was still alive. So it wasn't just the fact that she had somehow been part of keeping his daughter alive. It was just the fact that she had come at the right time. There was this continued philosophical exploration that was started in the season finale last year of how far is too far? Do the means justify the ends? You see Rick and his gang and Carol doing a lot of the same things that the people in Terminus are doing, but a lot of it has to do, of course, with intent. the chillingness of having the people in Terminus almost treating all of this like a job, complete with checklists and so forth. It was very disturbing there. I just really like the fact that they covered the bases of the story arc pretty well, with some major revisions, of course, but they covered it. They got the gang back together after basically it addresses the main thing that people worried about the second half of last season, which was the characters were all over the map and not interacting anymore. Well, now they're all back together, so people can't complain about that too much anymore. And I think that the flashbacks actually foreshadowed the arrival of a character that I think a lot of people are dreading and anticipating. I think we're going to see that those flashbacks come back in a meaningful context before the season is over.
Can I interrupt you and ask you sort of specifically what you made there? I think you might be a bit further ahead of me in the actual comics, but I'm honestly curious because I'm fairly sure that the stuff in the flashbacks they mostly addressed or dealt with.
The impression that I got in the flashbacks was that the people came to Terminus, took extreme advantage of them, and then some of them simply just left, and others they managed to overcome. And thus decided that they needed to be just as brutal as the people who took advantage of them. And my interpretation is that there is a certain character with a baseball bat that I think was the leader of the group that came to Terminus.
Didn't they already get the leader? Wasn't the leader the guy in the crazy guy in the crate?
I don't think so.
He was one of them at least.
He was one of them, but I don't think that was the guy. And that's where I say I'm not sure. I think that they might have been foreshadowing something down the road. And if that's the direction that they're going, it makes an awful lot of sense to do it this way. But we shall see. We shall see. I don't want to say more because I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. But anyone who's aware of the source material should know exactly where my brain is going right now. And I'm only on like 120 or so. I think that's as far as I got. I did not get through the big conflict that came after. Anyway, so yeah, I loved it. I thought it was a great start. I like the fact that they basically did what everyone anticipated they were going to do in the season finale, and instead did it as the season premiere.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big shock to me. So yeah, I loved it. Now, Edmund, what would you add to the discussion here?
Well, you've actually covered most of my reaction. If anything, the only reason why I maybe downgraded it a little bit was feeling a little bit of that inevitability that that Gary was talking about. I mean, certainly in that whole throat slitting scene. I mean, it was lining them up, and it was like, oh yeah, those poor guys who we don't know at the end. So we know something's going to interrupt them before they get to our main cast members. So. Just flashed into my head that I guess those were the red necks as opposed to the red shirts. But I mean that was all kind of overwhelmed for me by them, as you say, avoiding getting bogged down in one location and taking care of Terminus in this one episode, and the sort of just propulsive force that they managed with the way they shifted it from showing us inside and then showing Carol what I really loved was all of these little techniques and tactics and that they've developed over these four seasons, you know, and seeing how many of those she was using to, you know, actually make it reasonably believable that one determined person who knows what she's doing could actually cause that much havoc and mayhem and enough to get everybody out of there.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Gary, what would you add to this?
It was nice to see that Rick's come to peace with what's her name?
Carol.
With Carol, yeah. Of course, because she saved his life. But I'm glad that everybody's back together and we're moving forward again. It might have had their moments. I like the show better as a group dynamic. So. I'm glad everyone's back together and moving forward, and we'll see how close they do stay with the comic books, John. I hope they continue to tell good stories and not too closely follow the books.
Yeah, I think thematically they will in the broad strokes, but I think they'll get there a little bit differently. But I think they've already said they basically want to follow the roadmap more or less. But we've seen where they've deviated before, and when they have, it's worked out fairly well, I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for The Walking Dead for now. Let's see. Onstum, I think it's your turn again.
Well, we covered Arrow, so it seems only right that we maybe dig into The Flash.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, Gary, when you didn't go there, but that's okay. Yes, Gary, we'll get into your side of the Arrowverse that you're familiar with this time around. Two episodes, and we'll go ahead and start with the promo for the series itself.
To understand what I'm about to tell you, you need to do something first. You need to believe in the impossible. Can you do that?
Sorry.
My name is Barry Allen. My whole life I've been running, usually from bullies. Sometimes I escaped. Sometimes I did not.
Officials are now trying to shut down the portal accelerator. So far, have been out of the
If you don't mind doing the recap, please, Bronson.
Mm-hmm. Okay, The Flash, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. Real original name there.
I know.
Scientist Barry Allen acquires super speed through a freak accident and becomes known as the fastest man alive. In the opener, Barry, a CSI investigator, is struck by lightning and awakens from a coma 9 months later with the gift of super speed. Barry puts his new powers to work when another metahuman attacks the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what would you give this one?
I give this one an 8.
All right. And Edmund, how about you?
I will go with an 8 as well.
All right. And Gary?
I'll bump it up a little bit to a 9.
All right. Henry gave this one an 8.5, as will I. So there we go. All right. So, Gary, actually, why don't you get us started off here? Since you don't get to talk about Arrow, we'll let you go ahead and get started with its spinoff.
Thank you. That's good. I get to participate in the verse a little bit. But we do get to see Arrow in this this pilot, so yes. It's not completely Arrow-free. But anyway, yeah, Barry's a CSI. He's been a CSI since, the character was introduced. And I like that they're maintaining that. He's bears a little too closeness to CSI sometimes with his amazing leaps in deductive skills, but still, it's fun that they have that aspect for him. Anyway, he's there's an accident at Star Labs, which most comic book fans should be familiar with as well. And as a result, Barry ends up getting struck by lightning and gets put into a coma for 9 months. As he comes out, we find out that he has, he's found out he has superpowers. The former, the owner of Star Labs, as well as some technicians are, are monitoring him and following, following his progress and eventually, give him the suit that is supposed to protect him from, air friction and things of that. And that's one aspect of the show. Then, Barry is a person though, and we find out that, what's actually happened to Barry growing up was his mother was killed in front of him by what he believes to be a man in a yellowish outfit. And, however, no one else believes this. And in turn, his father, played by John Wesley Snipes, the Flash from the 90s, is convicted of the crime of killing the mother, and sentenced to, what appears to be life at this point, given Barry's age at the beginning and as the show picks up. And the, I don't want to call it police commissioner, a police officer, takes him under the wing and either adopts him or becomes a ward from him. And they're doing it a lot better than the Gotham version with Gordon and Bruce Wayne. They sort of really handle it well because he actually moves into his house and he becomes very much the a father to Barry Allen. He has I'll refer to it as stepsister, and that later plays on as Barry gets older and becomes interested in girls or her specifically, Iris, who in the comic books becomes his wife. So who knows? See where they go with that. Hopefully they don't kill her. Anyway, we have all this sort of set up, and that's what a pilot's supposed to do. We get to see Barry. We learn his backstory. We see him get his powers. We see him want to do something positive with these powers. And then we get what, for me, if I can jump right to the end, is the spoiler. The head of Star Labs name is Harrison Wells. And at the end, we see him sort of go up to this wall, hit a button, and something really funny happens to the wall. It sort of disassembles itself. He goes into this room. The wall reassembles himself. He goes in, and he sees this screen that says mentions something about Flash dying in 2024, and he stands up as he had been in a wheelchair throughout the whole show. So it was in the last few seconds, I felt they really sort of kicked everything up and sort of – without a pun intended, really started the story running to see how we reached that point. More importantly, it puts, doubts if this guy Wells is from the future, as the last name would intend with the pun of Wells.
Yes.
It really sort of set things up for what I hope to be a good series. Now, you guys weren't quite as thrilled with me, but I thought it was a really good episode.
Yeah, I think it may be minor distinctions, but I think that Bronstam, granted, we're going from 8 to 9 here. It's not a huge difference. Edmund, Bronstam, one of you two jump in. A little bit lower at an 8, merely above average versus exceptional. So what maybe was a little bit less of a shine for you than for Gary?
I think for me, certainly, given our usual rubric, giving an 8 to a pilot, it is an acknowledgement that it was an exceptionally well done. And especially as Gary was going through that, all of the things they introduced, the fact that they did all this in just a standard hour episode, as opposed to doing an hour and a half, special introductory movie length or something like that. It was really just emphasizing for me just how well they managed to balance in introducing all of those elements and actually get a villain in there and some actual introductory crime fighting as well. I've got to admit, I hadn't really been thinking about it until Gary brought it up. Yeah, with Harrison Wells, if his middle name turns out to be George, then we know that they're just tweaking us.
Yeah.
But, so. But yeah, especially for an introductory episode, it's one of those rare ones where you didn't really feel the clunkiness of the exposition. If anything, it was just a matter that they had to go through all of that, is more what kept my score just slightly lower.
Okay. Bronstone, what would you add to this?
It had some pilotitis, but not nearly as much as you would expect. Part of it is the fact that, this is a lot of the same production people and whatnot. They had a chance to get their feet under them with some of the actors and with putting together this kind of TV show in making Arrow. While it wasn't, I thought it was a really, really good episode. It was really fun. It got me on board with watching the rest of the show. It wasn't a, super, super, awesome kind of thing. It had those pilot problems of, clunky ways of trying to introduce certain people and concepts and what. But on the whole, it was a very successful pilot because it introduced me to the characters, to the concept, the basic story premise, and got me interested in wanting to keep watching. Got me really interested. I thought it was it's one of the better new shows that I've seen this particular season.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that it was basically an adaptation of the original plan to have it as a backdoor pilot in the Arrow season itself. So a lot of the same people were working on it, and you can see that sense of confidence in the universe that they're building. I think it did have a little bit of pilotitis. I think that there were some clunky elements here and there, but it managed to smooth past those pretty quickly. So for me, I think with all the pedigree behind it and its original intent, I'm not surprised that it managed to do so well, given its parent. I was a little more concerned about the next episode and whether or not it was going to live up to the same level. And so that having been said, let's go ahead and run that promo and go from there.
Something out there is saving people.
Everybody's out. What else you got for me?
You already have a job in law enforcement, Barry.
You can't be running around like some supersonic fireman.
No more heroics.
Know your limits.
I'm in way over my head.
Meet Captain Clone.
Don't worry, I'll come up with something cooler.
The Flash, new hit series this Tuesday at 8, 7 Central on the CW.
And Bronstone, if you don't mind.
Sure thing. The Flash Season 1, Episode 2, Fastest Man Alive. Barry changes into the Flash when six gunmen storm a university event honoring a scientist, but his heroics don't match up to his expectations. Meanwhile, Iris becomes even more intrigued by the Red Streak.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what would you give this one?
I'd give this one another 8.
Okay. Edmund?
I will stick with my 8 as well.
Barry?
I'll go with the 8.
All right. Yeah, that's about where I fell, and Henry fell down to a 7.5, so not too far away from where we are, but certainly a little bit lower than the previous episode. And again, Gary, I want to kind of get your spin on this. You dropped a point. It's not a huge deal, but this was maybe what I was concerned about, going from the backdoor pilot to what is essentially really the first true episode of the series on its own, and maybe losing a little bit there.
To be honest, in some ways, this episode felt a little bit more expository to me than the pilot did. The relationship and difficulties he was having with his father figure were starting to pop up a little bit more. I enjoyed the Iris tension and the clunkiness, but at the same time, and I know it's the CW, but I was hoping to avoid the teenage angst that seems to be present in the Barry-Iris relationship, but I guess we're going to get that anyway. So that was partially the big disappointment. I guess I was hoping for more of a happy beginning. The introduction of the character who could duplicate himself was
Multiplex or whatever it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. was unexpected. He's not one of the typical Flash rogues gallery. If you know, as Flash seems to, you know, just as you know most other superheroes do, they have a sort of recurring villains. This isn't one for Flash typically, so it was a nice surprise. And once again, it's interesting, and I'm curious how far along they're going to take this. That they say that you know this is sort of a result of the same explosion that caused you know the lightning to hit Flash, and that there's more of these people, and you know Flash. Star Labs talks about Flash being, you know, used to, you know, keep track of these people or to deal with them in some way. And so, you know, I'm hoping this doesn't sort of go into a villain of the week or villain of every 2 weeks, because the way they implied was that there are dozens of people that were affected by this. So when I saw the graphic and they showed all the sort of little spots, which I'm assuming were symbolizing people affected by this, that there were a lot of them. And so, I don't necessarily want this to become that type of episode either. You know, we've had these concerns, you know, for example, with another show we review, Haven, where they had the troubles of the week. And I'm hoping it doesn't quite develop into that. I'm not sure that I want a recurring villain, although we might have one already. But at the same time, I don't want a new superpowered villain every week.
Yeah, there are shades of Smallville in the Meteor Storm.
Yeah, oh, that's true here. Too. That's true.
Yeah, that's definitely there as far as this super metahuman of the week, I guess you would call it, based on what they were saying. Ronstam, how about you? Similar concerns or not as concerned? What would you say?
This episode reminded me a lot of the early episodes of Arrow for you know. Well, some of the early episodes of Arrow, for obvious reasons, it's a second episode that's got to try and establish a bit more of what the ongoing pattern's going to be. And part of it is that, you know, there's going to be superpowered bad guys for, you know, for the Flash to face off against. And, you know, it's nailing down what the dynamic between the characters is going to be, what some of the ongoing conflicts and stories are going to be and stuff like that. It's, I mean, we've always said when we're watching new shows that the second episode is going to give you a far better indication of what the show is going to be like and whether or not you're going to enjoy it than a pilot episode is, because pilots made for executives. Episode two is made for audiences. Mm-hmm. I'd lose interest in the show after a little bit if they just did episodes like this all the time of just like, you know, a new superpowered baddie and the whole episode is just Flash figuring out how to stop him. Not that they should definitely do those because you know, this was kind of fun and stuff like that. But what Arrow did really well right off the bat was that it started mixing in more serious sort of ongoing story arc based episodes. I mean, I think it was episode 4 or 5 where they had a whole episode about Ollie throwing everyone off his trail and stuff like that. So I think, I think within a few episodes, we're going to see Flash start to do something similar. And there is a crossover on the books towards the, you know, about a third of the way into the season. On the whole, I thought it was a strong episode. It reinforced a lot of things I like about the pilot. You know, I thought that the main villain and his conflict was a little bit run of the mill. It was visually impressive, but as a character, I you know didn't think he worked particularly well. I'm definitely interested in finding out what's going on with Dr. Wells. This was a solid. A very solid follow-up.
Anything to add to that, Edmund?
Yeah, I can see the Gary's point and the danger of what they're setting up with all of these other people affected by the blast. I think it can also work in their favor in terms of having him going at this early stage when he's just learning what his powers are and how to handle them. That he's also going up against sort of proto villains who are in a similar stage themselves. So I think what's going to make or break it is them getting the right mix between those elements and this sort of stealth villain that they seem to be setting up with Wells and that ongoing story. So I think if they can mix those properly, it should work out well.
Yeah, we shall see. I mean, it's still coming in above average, but we'll see if it can kind of stay afloat here, and it won't get bogged down like Gary. You're kind of concerned that it'll follow maybe in the Smallville footsteps a little too much. We shall see. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this show here, and next time we will be finishing out the week, at least what we can get to this time around. And so, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.